Central Jersey Talk Radio, Central Jersey 1450, WCTC with the Restaurant Guys. Call them now at 732-545-9282. 732-545-9282.
Hello, everybody, and good morning. You are listening to the Restaurant Guys. I'm Mark Pascal, and I'm here with Francis Schott. Together, we own Stage Left and Catherine Lombardi restaurants in New Brunswick, New Jersey. We're here to give you the inside track on food, wine, and the finer things in life. You can listen to us every day from 11 to noon. Download our podcast on iTunes.
Good morning, Marky.
Good morning, Francis.
How are you?
I'm doing well. How you doing today?
I'm okay.
Yeah?
Okay? I was searching the food blogs.
You know, whenever he starts with, I'm okay, means he's about to go on a rant.
I was disturbed by something. It's not really a rant. I think it's actually kind of fun. There's this great food blog called DallasFood.org.
Frequently when you go on a rant, you don't think it's really a rant.
But the
rest of us, we know.
No.
We know it's a rant.
This is somebody who got caught. This isn't like putting small farmers out of business or anything. It's just people preying on our greed and stupidity. DallasFood.org. We'll put the link up on our website, restaurantguysradio.com. Guy did an incredible investigative piece on Noka chocolates, which in the last 2 years, Noka chocolates have established a reputation quite purposefully.
The most expensive chocolates in the world.
The most expensive chocolate in the world. The four-piece Noka vintage collection is $853 a pound. These aren't big pieces. Okay? they're four-piece in the signature box, which is their stainless steel box. The idea is you buy it in the signature box and then refill from the other ones.
Right.
$2,080 a pound.
That's a lot of money.
To give you an idea, foie gras is $50 a pound. American Wagyu beef is $100 to $300 a pound. Sterling silver is $170 a pound. Marijuana is $350 a pound. No pasta right now. So you get less of a pound of chocolate in the chocolate for marijuana swap. And a fat stack of single dollar bills is only $454 a pound.
Just so you know. Chocolate does make me feel really good.
Yeah, though. Yeah. Okay, so check this out. So
it doesn't make me crave other foods, though.
Well, so the guy who writes the Dallas Food blog, DallasFood.org blog, was like, all right, is it worth it? And he didn't feel that it was. And so he went back and he did some checking, and we have here a picture of the Noka Chocolatier facility, which is between two hair salons.
Classic Cuts and TK hair salons.
In El Paso, yeah. Why is it so expensive? So say the owners, it's because of the quality of the chocolate, because they use no additives, no vanilla, no soy lecithin, and a minimum of 75% cocoa. Okay, there are plenty of chocolate tiers.
A lot of chocolate like that.
And
we have our friends at Scharfenberger who make chocolates like that.
They also say this. They also use no vanilla, and they say the chocolate is single origin. Now let's think about that for a moment. Single origin. Everything's from a single origin. The earth is an origin. Africa's an origin. It doesn't say single plantation.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now, most of these are single country, but the founders, Noah Houghton and Katrina Merrims, Noah and Katrina.
I get it.
They say that it's the quality of the chocolate, except that they're not chocolate makers. They're not bean-to-bar chocolate makers. They're chocolatier, or they're confectioners. They take chocolate.
So now we need to explain to people exactly what the difference therein is.
Well, taking beans and processing it into chocolate is a very labor-intensive process, and it has to do with how you select the beans and then what you do to it.
And there are only about 13 people doing that in the United States.
So very rare to see. Most of the chocolatiers, like Jacques Torres and La Maison du Chocolat, even on the high end.
They buy chocolate, or they buy the liquid.
Or the cheap ones buy chocolate liqueur.
And they make chocolate out of this already processed chocolate.
But most of even the finest chocolates they buy finished chocolate, which is called couverture, and that's how they make chocolate. That's what these guys do. Anyway, they wouldn't. They seem to. If you look at all of their, this guy did a great report listening to them talk about their chocolate. They seem to keep attributing the quality, the crazy prices, $2,000 a pound.
It's a lot of money
to the quality of their chocolate, as if they made the chocolate themselves. But
that's when, by the way, if you buy a kidney on the black market, it's about $2,000 a pound. Okay?
But when pressed, they have admitted a couple of times that they buy a semi-processed product that's made to their specifications, except that this guy at DallasFood.org did an exhaustive search for the ingredients that they their ingredients list, and their ingredients only match up to one available chocolate, and it's Bonat, which is, you know, in the middle of the top tier of chocolates.
Right.
And what's further, what this guy asserts is that what they do for their little teeny tiny chocolates is they melt them down. They take the Bonat chocolate bars, melt them, put them into a little mold that say Noka, and sell them to you.
Oh, boy.
For a 4,000% markup.
Oh, boy. And you know what? Hey, you know what I say there? That we as the American public, we deserve what we get there. If we're buying that because, just because it's of the status of purchasing
that's it,
then we get what we deserve. If you... Listen, Francis and I own two super premium restaurants. Okay, they're very expensive, and I'd like to think that you're getting something superior to something you would get at something that in a restaurant that's less expensive, whether it be service or ambiance or wine list or food quality. I'd like to believe that it's one or all of those things is better than the less expensive restaurants.
And we know that we're not taking home like crazy amounts of money laughing at you on the way home. We make a good honest living. We're happy with what we do for them. But this is crazy. This is taking the Bonat chocolate, making a brand called Noka. These guys are two accountants, and the guy also does a series of taste tests, and he has a bunch of pictures. It seems as though when they temper the chocolate, which is when you melt down chocolate and then remold it, you have to retemper it, which gives it its shiny finish, they don't do as good a job as the original Bonat bars. So they basically take Bonat bars...
And make them worse.
And make them worse. And the other thing is he has a number of the chocolates. They show a bloom on the chocolate, which is where you get that, like, chalky, like, powdery kind of substance on the chocolate, which is a flaw. And the other... So the two things they make...
Either in storage or making the chocolate.
They make the basic chocolates, and they also make another series, which is a little less expensive, of truffles. But truffles are basically a ganache that is usually rolled in chocolate or cocoa, or I don't know, is it a ganache? It's like a chocolate butter mixture. And it's usually rolled in cocoa and rolled in chocolate. And the best ones are handmade, very light, very perishable. Theirs are made, they're what they call commercial, which is you take a blob of the stuff and you enrobe it in tempered chocolate. You just pour it over the blob.
Mm-hmm.
And then put a little sprinkled chocolate on top. That's a commercial and not an expensive truffle. That's their truffles, and they're charging thousands of dollars for them. Here, let's look at this. So if they're paying $11 to $12 a pound, which is what Bonat chocolate is commercially, if you buy Noka's 48-piece Vintages Encore box, which is the cheap box, for $100, you're getting the same amount of chocolate you have gotten by buying 100-gram Bonat bar at retail price of $7.50. That's a 1,300% over retail price.
Wow.
Looking at it another way, you can spend your $100 bill on 3.6 ounces of Noka's rebranded Bonat chocolate or 2.8 pounds of Bonat's individually wrapped bars, and Bonat does a better job. Isn't that amazing?
Wow, that is amazing.
This has got to be devastating today.
Well, I don't think it's out yet. So this is
the Emperor Has No Clothes expose.
And again, this is an expose that somebody else did. Francis and I are quoting this article.
At DallasFood.org. If you buy Noka's dainty four-piece Vintages Encore box for $16, you're getting 3/10 of an ounce of chocolate. Noka's cost for the chocolate in that box would be 23 cents. That's a markup of 6,956% as their chocolate. That's the cost for the over the cost for the chocolate in the $60 24-piece Vintages Encore box. It'd be $1.35, making the markup 4,444%.
And again, you know what? If this were the best chocolate in the world, if this were actually something better than you could get anyplace else, and they said, our price is what our price is, and that's what it is, and if you want it, this is how you get it. I wouldn't have a big problem with that, but that's not what this is.
Wild stuff. DallasFood.org. Check it out. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys. Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 11:15. Hello, everybody, and welcome back. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys. Mark and Francis of Stage Left and Catherine Lombardi Restaurant. Today we're talking with Leslie Brenner. She is the food editor for the L.A. Times. She was a finalist for the Prix de Medici, the coveted French Award for Fiction, and a winner of the Versailles World Cookbook Fair Award. She's also received a James Beard Award for her magazine writing. She joins us today from L.A., and we're going to be talking about a number of things, but one of which is a book that we read a long time ago, and I recently reread, called The Fourth Star.
Leslie, welcome to the show.
Thanks so much.
You know, this book, The Fourth Star, Mark and I run restaurants, and we're outside of New York. We're in New Jersey, and our one restaurant, Stage Left, has been around for about 15 years almost, and we're ranked among the top restaurants.
And has three stars, and we're fighting for that fourth one, which is one of the great appeals of that.
Which is why we said, hey, get that book. Three stars from the New York Times, but four stars from everybody else, but that's a hard nut to crack out here. Now, your book is about a restaurant that gets a fourth star. Why don't you talk? Whatever prompted you to pursue this? How a restaurant goes from three stars to four stars?
Well, it was interesting. I was living in New York at the time. I had been there for 14 years, I think, at that point, and writing about food. And Daniel Boulud had just opened a big, sparkling, gorgeous new restaurant, which was Danielle, and he had moved from smaller quarters in the Surrey Hotel to open this restaurant, and it got a lot of attention in the press. Everybody was very excited about it, and when it opened, the New York Times gave it three stars.
It's funny because you would think three stars, which is, very excellent restaurant, but Boulud was so clearly shooting for four stars and charging four-star prices that when he got three stars, I remember there was like a collective,
it was a little letdown, for sure.
In the business.
Well, it was a big letdown because, he was really one of the city's absolute top chefs and had been one for a long time, since the time he had been at Le Cirque, and then he got four stars, for his original Danielle when he opened.
Did he win a game show to become top chef? Is that how that happened?
Yeah, in those days it used to be a little harder, I guess. you had to make the amazing food and have the great service and everything else. His expectations for himself were very high and his expectations for his staff were very high. And I felt, I of course was anxious to check out the restaurant when it opened and I was blown away by it. I thought it was amazing. And so I thought, knowing Danielle as I did a little bit, I knew that he was immediately going to, attempt to bring the place up to the level of quality that, it was already at a very, very high level. But I knew because of his personality and his expectations for himself and his staff that he would immediately try to, kick the whole thing into a higher gear.
Well, now let's start at the very outset. When the New York Times review came out, what did they find was not up to four-star standards, and did he agree with their assessment of the situation?
I can't remember specifically. That was in 2000, so that was 6 years ago. I'd have to go back and read that original review. But I think they found fault with a couple of the dishes. It was nothing that sounded that serious. It just wasn't up to snuff yet.
Remember that four stars is reserved for really a chosen few. It's things need to be beyond perfect is exactly right.
Exactly. So I think he was very reticent to say, no, I think we deserved the four stars, we were robbed. He would never have said anything like that. But I think there was a feeling in the restaurant that they among the staff that they did deserve it. But it was amazing to see because, I just thought it would be really interesting to spend some time in that restaurant and see how everybody would be working and behaving. And it was fascinating because they, these people who were operating at such a high level in the first place now had to really kick it up a notch.
Now, you're full of culinary phrases today this show is just chock full of landmines of culinary phrases that have since become popular, like kick it up a notch. Now, you decide that you're going to take a look at this, and how did you come up? And you come up with the book, The Fourth Star, which chronicles Daniel Boulud's evolution from three and his final attaining of those four stars. How did you get involved? How were you able to look so closely at the situation on the ground?
Well, it was interesting, and I have to say I got lucky because I really didn't think that the New York Times would revisit the restaurant that soon. Because they revisited, I think, it was about a year later, maybe 15 months later, So I wanted to spend a year in a restaurant just in terms of my own development as a food writer. I thought that would be a great way to learn a lot more about cooking. So I thought, you know, that would be the perfect place to spend writing such a book. And, you know, when I saw that he got the 3 stars, I thought, oh, this is the place I really want to write about. So I approached him, and I told him what I wanted to do, and he said, fine. And I said, well, Danielle, you know, I think you should really think about this, because I'm going to need access to every part of your restaurant. I'm going to want to see, you know, the books. I'm going to want to spend time with the sommelier in the cellar. I'm going to want to spend time in the front of the house with the wait staff, and a lot of time in the kitchen. And, you know, I think you should really think about it overnight, because, you know, I'm going to be painfully honest, and it may not all be pretty.
Yeah,
and
as the restaurant owner, I think he was nuts.
And he agreed just immediately.
It was either just immediately, or maybe I urged him to sleep on it, and we spoke the next day. But it was pretty quick.
We're going to talk more in just a moment with Leslie Brenner about her book, The Fourth Star, chronicling Danielle Ballou's rise from 3 to 4 stars in the New York Times. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 11:25.
Floors, walls, and lighting. The restaurant guys learned long ago that the key to making a space look great are floors, walls, and lighting. There's no tougher test to a carpet than a busy restaurant. From design to installation to cleaning, the Gillespie Group has handled the restaurant guys' restaurant floors for more than 10 years. Designers know what looks great on the first day. Bob Gillespie knows what will continue to look great year after year. Gillespie doesn't just install carpets. Their quality clean division has experience and expertise to keep that carpet looking great. In our business, it's the details that matter. In your home or office, the details make a lasting impression. The Gillespie Group handles projects from large hotels to offices right down to your living room. Look down. Go on, look down. Right there by your feet. You see. You need the Gillespie Group. Call them at 732-254-5508 or visit them at thegillespiegroup.com. Tell them the restaurant guys sent you and get a free cleaning with any installation. Remember, it's Gillespie for carpet and flooring, 732-254-5508.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Mark and Francis of Stage Left and Catherine Lombardi. We're talking with Leslie Brenner about her book, The Fourth Star, which chronicles Danielle Ballou's rise from 3 to 4 stars in the New York Times several years ago. Now, you went in and were intimately involved with this restaurant for a year. As a writer, what did you do? Did you just interview people? Did you stand and watch? Did you work? Did you peel carrots? How did you get such an intimate view of what happens at such a high-level restaurant?
Well, I did all of those things, and I had two things working in my favor. One is that I take shorthand, so I was able to just put on chef's whites and kind of stand back and watch everything that was going on and write down everything verbatim that everybody was saying. The other thing working in my favor was that I speak French. I'm married to a Frenchman who curses a lot. And what you
oh, so in the kitchen, you're perfect.
Exactly. I understood all the cursing.
I work in a kitchen, and the only French I speak is cursing. Cursing and wine. Mark speaks French. I do Spanish.
And somebody called the guy next to him a dirty beast, and you knew exactly what he meant.
No, I didn't know if he wanted to carve the dirty beast, or I didn't get that all out. So you basically were involved for an entire year. How many hours a week would you say you were at this restaurant?
Boy, I'd say I probably went 3 or 4 times a week, and would, you know, show up in the afternoon and stay through the end of service. So, boy, I don't know what that adds up to. I don't know.
About a gazillion hours.
Yeah, a gazillion hours, yeah.
Well, if you want to know how a restaurant works and get a pretty a view beyond reality TV about what really goes on inside a 4-star restaurant, a very insightful book is The Fourth Star by Leslie Brenner. After the news, we're going to talk with her more about how Danielle Ballou changed his top operation from, like, almost from the penultimate to the ultimate New York restaurant operation over the course of a year and the heartaches attendant there, too. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 11:30.
Central Jersey Talk Radio, Central Jersey, 1450. WCTC with The Restaurant Guys. Call them now at 732-545-9282. 732-545-9282.
Hello, everybody. everybody, and welcome back. You are listening to The Restaurant Guys. I'm Mark Pascal, and I'm here with Francis Schott. Together we own Stage Left and Catherine Lombardi Restaurants in New Brunswick, New Jersey. We're here to give you the inside track on food, wine, and the finer things in life. You can listen to us every day from 11 to noon. Reach us through restaurantguysradio.com or download our podcast on iTunes.
Today we're talking with Leslie Brenner. Leslie is the food editor for the LA Times. She has many other forms of writing to her credit. She has a James Beard Foundation Journalism Award. And we're talking with her about a book that, you know, I've read it and I've reread it, and it's very germane to the restaurant industry, called The Fourth Star, which chronicles Danielle Boulud's rise from a three-star restaurant in New York over the course of 14 or 15 months to getting that fourth star, which is the highest accolade awarded by the New York Times. Leslie, you've written about food quite extensively, and you chose to spend more than a year on this project. Was there anything that... though you had spent all that time as a food writer, that surprised you about being involved, seeing the operation of that four-star restaurant?
There was a lot that surprised me, because although I had been in that world for many years, I had been in many restaurant kitchens in New York City, spending that kind of sustained time allowed me to see that the level of perfectionism and the striving for excellence that just went on every single day. It really amazed me, and also the creativity of some of the sous chefs, a number of whom have gone on to do their own terrific things in other restaurants in the meanwhile. But really, that just the level, the sustained level of excellence every single day.
What do you think happened when Boulud got three stars and said, you know what, I want that fourth star, and I'm going to make some changes? What kind of things do you think were a result of Boulud and his staff saying, okay, this was three stars, to make it even better, when, you know, most people would walk into an operation like that and say, I can't even imagine how you would make this better. What kind of things did he institute, did you chronicle in your book, that he changed over time?
Well, I have to tell you that, the restaurant was operating at a really high level, as I said, before the three-star review came out. And I think that he knew that what he was doing was really good. And so I don't remember any major changes. I think what he did was he just really kicked everybody's butt and, and said more, better. They paid a lot of attention to the service. It was really just like, let's just keep doing this and make it better and better every day. But he already had a terrific staff. He didn't do any restaffing. He just really pushed everybody. It was always, it was pushing, pushing, pushing.
You know, when I'm talking to my staff, and one of the first things that I talk to them about is the difference between good and very good is relatively small when you compare it to the difference between very good and excellent. And the thing about excellence is, and you touched on this a second ago, was excellence is every moment of every day. There can be not even a momentary letdown if you want to be excellent all the time. And that's why excellence is so much harder than very good.
Well, I think that's true. And I think, in any restaurant, consistency is hugely important. And then when people are paying the kind of prices that they do at a restaurant like Danielle, it's all important.
You know, one of the things that you chronicled in the book that I thought was very it's attended to our philosophy, and we had Danny Meyer on the radio last week, who owns Gramercy Tavern in Union Square and the Danny Meyer's Restaurant Group in Manhattan. One of the things that he wrote in his book, Lessons in Service, and that we've always found, and that I think you allude to in the Fourth Star quite a bit, is that as a restaurant is around for a while, and the restaurants that value long-term relationships, you say you were almost never fired from Boulud. You know, he kicked your butt, but these long-term relationships, if you have the same people in place, the same cast of characters, and you keep working on it and working on it and working on it, so much of the restaurant business is plagued with high turnover. How do you get better if you keep changing the cast of characters? How important do you think limiting turnover was to him getting better?
I think I think it was very important. I mean, he had Alex Lee running the kitchen. Alex was the chef de cuisine there for, and then I can't remember exactly what year he left. He went on to do something else, but he had been working with Danielle for years and years, and Danielle could really trust him. Mm-hmm. And so I think that trust is really important. And Michael Lawrence had been running the front of the house, and he had been working with Danielle for years. And I think Danielle is a restaurateur who makes a huge effort to keep his people happy.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, did he ever scream in the kitchen? Yes. But at the same time, I think he really took the time to understand the people who were working for him and to understand their needs and to make it work for them.
Is that why people are so loyal to him? Was that his way of causing that to happen?
I think so. I mean, there was a pastry chef his executive pastry chef during most of that year that I spent in the restaurant was Johnny Iuzzini, who's he's now the pastry chef at Jean Georges. But there came a time, and Johnny was very young, and there came a time when Danielle felt it would be good for Johnny to travel around Europe and, you know, do some stages and cook and eat. And he pretty much financed Johnny's trip.
Isn't that good for all of us?
Yeah.
to go around Europe and eat and cook and...
It is, but I think Danielle saw it as something that was important if Johnny was going to be able to take over the kitchen at some, you know, the pastry kitchen, which he did. So I think, you know, Danielle sees the interest of the people who work for him as his interest too, and which I think is a smart thing.
You know, one of the other things that you talked about, one of the things that changed in the 4-star review, they really talked about how they made you feel welcome, and it was sort of we see the end of the this is the kind of the beginning of the end of the era, the middle of the end of the era of the snooty New York sommelier, and Bruno Jamais was the longtime maitre d' there, but also in wine service, he had a very charismatic guy named Jean-Luc Ledoux, who's a friend of ours actually, who has since gone on to open his own wine shop. He's actually been on the show. You can check him out on our website. But how important was front of the house service in this chef owned restaurant, and how involved was Danielle in the front of the house service?
He was very involved. You know, every day before service began, there'd be a service meeting, and Danielle and Alex would both come out and talk to the front of the house staff. But I think I think it was hugely important to Danielle. And you know, he got the best people, and the sommeliers knew how to talk to people at the table. Danielle knew, the art of the soigner was very important in that restaurant, and that means that little things that the wait staff in the kitchen would do for important customers to make them feel, you know, to make them feel welcome and appreciated, and that stuff was hugely important in that restaurant.
So talk to me about the difference between what happened to the soigner customer or the PX customer or the customer with the check next to his name in the reservation book, and how different they are treated in a restaurant like that than your average guy off the street who's just paying $400 for dinner.
Well, I think the difference would be that the average guy who was paying $400 for dinner would get fabulous service, extremely attentive, but he wouldn't necessarily get anything extra or special. He wouldn't get, he would probably get a little amuse. I can't remember now. I believe that everybody got an amuse.
A little snack from the kitchen, a little treat from the kitchen.
Exactly. But the customers who were, you know, marked as PX or very important, they didn't want to write VIP in the reservation books because everybody knew what that meant. So they wrote PX instead. And of course, it only took people 5 minutes to figure out what that meant.
Right.
But the PX customers would get, they would get these amazing, sort of these tiered trays of lots of different amuses, you know, and it was really spectacular.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. You always want to get PX next to your name in the reservation book. We're more egalitarian here in Jersey, but just here's the translation for those of you who listen to the show to get the translation of the restaurant lingo. That would be privileged extra, PX, in the reservation book. We're talking with Leslie Brenner about her book, The 4-Star, and about 4-star restaurants in general, and she is the editor, food editor of the L.A. Times. We'll be talking with her in just a moment. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 11:45.
Let me talk to you about lighting, and specifically about how you can enhance the appeal of any space. Lighting is a powerful, emotional, and aesthetic force. It's one of the most important elements of design. More than anything else, it sets the mood and tone for an entire experience. A room pops or it doesn't based on lighting. Lights on 9 is a top-notch commercial and retail lighting supplier. Lights on 9 supplied all the lights for our award-winning Catherine Lombardi restaurant, inside and out, dining room and kitchen. Lights on 9 has everything from tasteful and stylish chandeliers to table and floor lamps to outdoor lighting for illuminating a building or walkway or a sign. At Lights on 9, the service is exemplary, expert, and knowledgeable. They ship anywhere in the continental United States for free. Their retail store is in the Galleria Shopping Center on Route 9 in Manalapan. They're open 7 days a week. Call them at 732-308-9166. That's 732-308-9166. Or visit them at lightson9.com. That's lightson9.com.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Mark and Francis, and we're talking with Leslie Brenner, the food editor of the L.A. Times and author of The Fourth Star.
Leslie, one of the things I want to talk about are the things that Danielle sacrificed in order to attain the level that he wanted to attain. You know, one of the things you talk about in one of the chapters of the book is that he actually misses his brother's wedding because he needs to be in an event in New York City. Did he miss a lot of the other parts of life, or is that just something he accepts?
Well, I think it's, you know, I think it's really the life of a chef. I think it's a very difficult life. And, you know, I have a 9-year-old and he wants to be a chef, and I'm telling him, please don't be a chef because you won't have a regular life.
Right.
But, you know, Danielle has a daughter, and I think there were a lot of, you know, there were school events that he would have liked to be there at. And, you know, I think it's really family life is the main one.
You know, it's amazing because it's not just that there are so many hours, but the hours are completely opposite. If you do get some free time, it's from 9 in the morning till noon. Well, who the heck else is out there and available? So are there
– go ahead. Well, just one thing I wanted to add to that. You know, it's just it is part of the life. I mean, one of the things I just got the schedule for one of my daughter's shows at her school, and, you know, one of the shows happens to be the same day we're going to be interviewing Eric Repair from La Bernardin. So I have this conflict, and, you know, you try and juggle as best you can, but sometimes you can and sometimes you can't.
So Francis will be interviewing Eric Repair alone.
Very likely.
So Leslie, are there lessons that you think that, because I think that one of the reasons this book is so important is because I think that the restaurants that happened here really changed service overall. I mean, I think it was at a moment when sort of the snooty French restaurant was no longer what people were looking for, and a lot of the advances in service and food, the birth of the modern American restaurant was started with restaurants like Blue and the 4 stars they got. Are there trends that emerged from this that continue today, do you think?
Well, actually, I think it started a little bit before that, and I think that Danny Meyer was one of the people who was largely responsible for that in New York. You know, the service at Union Square Cafe, which opened, if I remember right, in the mid-80s, was a revelation. It was so much more casual and friendly, but still, you know, extremely professional. And here in Los Angeles, there was a restaurant called Michael's that's still around, and you have one in New York now, too. And Michael McCarty was also one of the people who was really responsible for the much more casual service. It's you know, a different style of service that really has kind of taken over.
Are restaurants like the 4-star restaurants in New York or in Paris, are they possible in Los Angeles? Are they possible in California? Or is there just a different aesthetic where the top restaurants there are of a different sort of character?
They're not possible here anymore. I think at one time they were, but our last very formal French restaurant, L'Orangerie, which has been operating for decades, is about to close. They'll be closing around the beginning of next year. And it's really the end of an era. Here in LA, people want much more casual than they do in New York. Formal service doesn't fly here at all. And even the food, they want food that's much more accessible. They don't want to spend as long at the table. It's actually quite different here.
Yet I'm seeing more and more food writers, national food writers, talking about L.A. as a restaurant scene, at the very least.
It always seems to be just about to break in at the height of things or retreating from things. People like to write about L.A., and I think it's a Rorschach test in which like to paint their own what they think is going on.
Well, you know, there's some terrific energy here right now, and we have some really great restaurants. They're just not of that formal stripe. We have amazing Italian places. Nancy Silverton and Mario Batali just opened a really casual pizzeria called Mozza. We have probably the best sushi bars in the country. There's a lot going on here. It's just it just feels different than it does in New York or even in San Francisco.
Did you read that piece where the week before Mozza opened, someone broke in and stole a bunch of sausages?
Well, I was the editor who commissioned that piece, so yeah,
I didn't remember where I'd read it, but I laughed out loud when I read that. Why don't you tell our listeners what happened?
Well, this restaurant, which is had been. Its opening had been delayed for months and months and months and months, and everybody in L.A. was very excited about it because, restaurant openings have been slow here lately. Everybody loves Nancy Silverton. So everybody's been really kind of keeping an eye on this place and driving by and looking, and it's not open. Well, about a week before they opened, somebody broke in and stole a lot of salumi.
$700 worth of salumi, I recall.
Yes, which apparently weighed about 40 pounds. Nancy Silverton caught it on her video, security
camera.
Video. And apparently the guy, it was a guy, she said, a yuppie-looking guy who rode up on a bicycle, broke in one of the windows, and then somehow disappeared out the back without his bicycle, but with the 40 pounds and $700 worth of salumi.
Can I tell you one of the funniest things in that article that I thought was what made me put it down and laugh?
Is that
he stole the salumi, and a mortadella disappeared a little bit later, but the guy was a yuppie, receding hairline, had a cell phone, wearing khakis, and he stole all this sausage, but he left this huge wheel of
provolone
on the bar. And so... You quoted her as saying that they were looking for a lactose intolerant yuppie without a bicycle. I'd love to see the police sketch of that.
I know.
Leslie Brenner, I want to thank you for taking the time to talk with us about your book. We're going to put a link up to it on our website so people can get it for Christmas. It's a great gift.
That's fantastic.
Thanks Leslie,
so much
for being with us.
Thanks, Leslie.
Thank you.
That's Leslie Brenner. She's a food editor for the LA Times. You can go to restaurantguysradio.com and pick up the book, and I'll also put a link to that article on the case of the stolen salumi from Armando Batali in Los Angeles. And we'll be back in just a moment. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 1155. Hey, everybody. Welcome back. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Mark and Francis of Stage Left and Catherine Lombardi Restaurant. That was a cross-continental conversation with L.A. with Leslie Brenner, from the food editor from Los Angeles Times.
You know, Leslie did talk about the book, and she said that she saw kind of a redoubling of efforts as Danielle went from wanting to be being three stars and wanting to be four stars to actually achieving the four stars. But I'll tell you, I went into Danielle and I ate in Danielle right before the three star review came out, and I'm going to tell you that I had a three star experience.
Mm-hmm.
It was great. The food was very good, but it wasn't perfect, and the wait staff wasn't perfect. And
let me tell you something.
It was not. I did not have a four star experience the first time I went to Danielle.
But let's be honest. If it's a mistake and they just miss,
mm-hmm.
And that happens once a month to one customer, your four stars.
Of course.
But, because mistakes happen. And how a restaurant responds to mistakes, because, look, we don't get everything perfect. No restaurant I've ever worked in or heard of gets everything perfect. But when someone calls with a legitimate complaint or writes you a letter or drops you a note,
mm-hmm.
you need to make a big deal out of it.
Yep.
And one of the
things, is a big deal. And
well, that's the thing. If you're lousy and that happens every day, you can't make a big deal out of it because
right.
you can't be going crazy every
right.
day. But if you do make a big deal out of it, it shows that you only make mistakes like that once in a blue moon.
Well, and the other thing I tell my staff is, If somebody took the time to write me a note, to drop me a letter, to write a comment card,
what
to
a great favor they've done.
Talk
us.
To me at the end of the meal. They've done me they've given me a tremendous opportunity. And the other thing I try to explain to the people who work for me, because they say, you know, we got two complaints on that, two complaints the whole month. That's just not very many complaints. And my response to that is, for each person who says something to you, there are 10 that say nothing.
And the other thing is, before my partner passes out here, for the other thing is that, you know, you're either getting better or you're getting worse. There's no such thing as staying the same in the restaurant business. So every complaint, every problem you have is an opportunity. Hope you've enjoyed the hour being with the Restaurant Guys. I'm Francis Schott.
And I'm Mark Pascal.
We are the Restaurant Guys. Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 12 noon.